Good morning, everyone. I would like to start with a question. Have you ever thought about your attitude when you interact with people? Do you take the first step? Or maybe do you rather wait and see? Or maybe you like to explore a bit before you jump into a conversation. And you may wonder, what does that have to do with diversity and inclusion? But the truth is, our attitude has a big impact in the way we interact with people around us. We see diversity in personality, in characteristics, but also in the way we include and how we exclude. My name is Gita Ramdjansing. I'm the founder of UIF, Universal Interaction Foundation. I educate in train in onboarding, hiring new people, assessing new people, improving team dynamics, and I train in skill development and personal well-being in a professional surroundings. I have published 2 years ago a book about human interaction, People the Manual, and I'm currently in the middle of the second one. UIF is involved in both leading and participating in EU-funded projects. One of them is RISE, Raising Inclusion and Skill for Employability. Currently, we are rolling this out in the Netherlands, Malta, and in Spain. And one of the other projects is Prometheus, which is about organization dynamics and skill development within organization dynamics in general. I hope you're ready for an exciting day and amazing topics with great speakers. But before we tap into that, I would like to take a closer look to something that easily is getting overlooked. How we connect and how we include. Which is actually the main reason that I'm here, to have the other diversity and inclusion talk. The one we all can relate to. When you think about interaction in general, you would like to have it included in the world that we are living in, the diverse one. About 6 months ago, Bas van der Hatert called me and talked about diversity and about Digitaal Werven. And he said, I'm working on my next event. It's about diversity and inclusion. And in all honesty, I thought, the agenda point. But at the same time, I realized, I tick those boxes. Woman, colored, second generation immigrant. Over 50, overweight. So here I am. Now, I can imagine that my Generation X sense of humor might be perceived as amusing by some of you. And some of you may think, no, maybe not. And some of you will wonder, where is this woman taking this to? And I can even imagine that there might be somebody here in the audience that is offended because I have made fun out of myself. Now, in this brief moment, we see already how we perceive human interaction and how we respond to that. Living in this era means that we're constantly connected and interrupted all the time with a lot of information, even when we have had, before we have had our morning coffees. Our autopilot routines are constantly being interrupted in this. It requires also that we need to pay attention to a lot of things, everything that is happening in our surroundings, and we also need to adapt to that. But whatever draws our attention, we perceive it in our own personal developed routines. We feel, we think, we act, but not necessarily in the same order, and also not with the same priorities. Let me take you back. 30 minutes ago, you walked in here. You were welcomed. You got your badge. Nice program. What did you do? Did you mingle? Or did you seek the empty table? Who seeked the empty table in here? Can I see some hands, please? Ah, there you are. Okay. Who did take a random spot and see who you bumped into? Can I see some hands, please? Okay. Who mingled? You're the only one who mingled? Okay. Okay. Now, okay, for those who mingled, what characteristics were you looking for to mingle with? Now, I can imagine that that might be hard to answer immediately, but let's try the other direction. Who did you not mingle with? Do you choose to include? Or do you wait to be included? To understand human interaction today, we need to go back in time, about 300,000 years ago, when human interaction was still relatively easy. Hostile environment, bunch of predators. Either you hunted for food, or you were hunted because you were the food. And if hunting was not on your talent chart, you better team up with somebody who had those skills. Visually, it was obvious to see who you could connect with, who we needed to avoid. And also what to be afraid of and who or what to be afraid of, actually. So the roles to safety, food providers, and caretakers were clearly visible. People's brain instinctively understood who to trust, who to avoid, and who totally to ban from their circle. Over the past 2 million years, our genetic makeup has changed a lot. Scientists explain this by the following. The cerebral expansion in here has developed because of the fact that there was a need, how to cope with challenges, which our ancestors basically faced. Now, those who were able to face those challenges and solve the problems, they were also able to reproduce. So our brains have been shaped by the challenges that our ancestors have been facing. Speaking about challenges, our ancestors trusted people who looked similar to them and who were beneficial. And in the act of embracing these new people, it was easier to connect with them, or at least the likeliness to connect with them was easier. They hoped that their genetic characteristics would be transferred to future generations. And everybody involved in this would benefit from that. Because let's be frank, who would want to operate in an environment of hostility and distrust just because people look and act differently? Decision-making in such a complex world meant that you needed to choose and assess the situation. Either you escaped, you defended, or you lay low. Bigger brains and our cognitive abilities made it possible for us to cooperate, to manipulate, to deceive. This made it possible that we were able to live in larger groups, peacefully, and maintain our survival. Even though that our monoculture, or the monoculture that our ancestors lived in, does not exist anymore, working with people who look differently and act differently is our new normal. But yet, the Stone Age toolkit is still relevant. We call it 21st century skills. We collaborate, we influence, we solve problems, and we protect. The big challenge today is all the layers of labeling. Because how do we identify real skill? Based on what we see, based on what we say, or based on what we do. We're going to look at some facts and figures. It's from the Diversity and Inclusion Marketplace statistics published earlier this year in the United States. On the left side, you will find the added value for your stakeholders, but the right side is much more interesting. Groups formerly seen as minorities may reach majority status by 2044. 48% of Gen Z are racial or ethnic minorities. But what does this mean for the Netherlands? When you look at places like Amsterdam, The Hague, and Rotterdam, you already see that we have more than 50% in there. A place like Utrecht, 36, and of course it may be a no-brainer that Urk has a very low percentage. But, anybody from Urk here? Okay. But when we draw a circle around this area, and when you look at Bunnik, De Bilt, or Amersfoort, the percentages are not that high either. What does this mean for diversity and inclusion? I need to make a note in here. 1923. Netherlands had a very homogeneous society, unlike the United States. United States had already about several generations of migrants in there, people who were welcomed, people who were forced to stay in there. The migrants in there were already at that stage able to establish themselves in here. 1923, Netherlands was not the case. The migrants who we have in here are members of the former colonies, Indonesia, Dutch Caribbean, and Suriname. When you look at the Turkish society or the Moroccans in here, they came later because of the tremendous staff shortage that we had later in the 60s, 70s, which also reflects on the map where they live and where they work. Now, I would say it is good to follow trends, what is happening in the United States and what is happening in the UK, but bear in mind, what does it mean for your own reality, for your own company? A research published in January this year was about interaction and problem-solving effectivity. It suggests that interaction can be divided in three styles: passive, aggressive, constructive. Not that neutral, but then again, language is not neutral. When we take this research into practice, and assuming we are not that kind of people today in here, we labeled it much more positively. What sets people apart is their interaction style. And you will notice today, and maybe yesterday or later this week when you have a meeting with your peers, You will notice the people who are more listening, easily initiating, or more questioning. These are much needed skills for smooth collaboration. But what if the context changes? Picture this, June 2023. It's a beautiful day. You're on your way to work. You're in a role that fits you like a glove. You walk up to your desk. And there it is, the memo. We are happy to announce that we're going to merge. We would like to thank you for your endeavors, but your role is going to change in 3 months. Okay. You've been hired for this role because you tick all the boxes, you have the right education, you have the right experience, and your superpower is your questioning skills. Because you make your peers think about the impact, about the consequences of decisions that have been taken by the organization. You keep on questioning, and all of a sudden, your questions are being perceived as judging. Or when you are more on the initiating end, and you know how to move and shake the organization and your peers, all of a sudden you're being pushing. Or when you like to, when you basically have been listening to those people that are initiating and asking all those questions, all of a sudden you're avoiding. Or what, like these researchers called, labeled it as passive. The context change. Did something significantly change in there? The context determines the meaning. The context determines the labeling of interaction. Inclusion and exclusion is very much depending on how our attempt to connect is being perceived. The effect of how we affect. Stripping away all the frills, like where your cradle stood, the pattern of your hair, your romantic preference, the brands you wear, the brands you are not wearing, and even your diet. It reveals something which is closer to our intrinsic motivation, our value systems. It reveals also how we thrive. And even that we are facing different circumstances, that we are still looking for like-mindedness. If we can allow the slide to have a second, that was not the idea, but okay. All right, okay, yeah, we can continue. As mentioned earlier, we feel, we think, we act, but not necessarily in the same order. Or with the same priorities. Today, especially today, we're going to be stimulated by a lot of images, interaction, information, and our brain is basically processing like random emotions or data. No matter how it is being processed, it triggers our drivers. We like, we dislike, or remain neutral. Whichever appeals to us, it dictates the way we are motivated and our attitude. We connect and we protect. When we connect, we use everything. Whatever we have learned, whatever we have been taught. But when we protect, We seek in our inner world, and our thoughts are taking us to the Efteling and the corners of all the roller coasters that we find in there. And maybe we discuss it with a few trustees in our surroundings. So it might take some time to reconnect. But what if our findings results into something that it makes it much more complicated to connect and to find our way to our peers? Now, while occupied in our inner world, we are being observed by the people around us. The outside world has also their opinions about us. Now, depending on how you prioritize your values and how you rank them, it might be when you like to, like earlier kind of more or less mentioned, when you like to do things and you're surrounded with people who are questioning and listeners, you might perceive them as, hey, I'm being delayed, I want to move. And when you are more the questioning type to get a proper understanding of stuff, and you are surrounded with conversation starters and listeners, you may have the impression that it's not well thought out, it's not going anywhere, and it's definitely not done in the right way. Or when you like to contemplate and listen first, you might even have the impression like that you're being pressured with all these questioners and initiative takers. Even though we appreciate people for their different perspectives, all of a sudden in this process, we are looking for like-mindedness. And it doesn't matter on which end of the spectrum we are. Perception helps us to make an interpretation about our experiences and decide how we engage and prioritize our values. And we rank them as such. It helps us to navigate through life. And we tend to think that being connected with our like-mindedness, that things are relatively easy because they value the same things as we do. Now, when you're proactive and you're surrounded by equally busy spirits, or when you want to have the proper understanding and you are doubling up your fellow peers are doubling up the digging, or the people who like to contemplate remain listening. Great dynamics to get things done, get to the bottom, or explore beyond borders. And when you belong to one of these groups, you have a clear image of what you want to have want to accomplish, or want to accomplish in the interaction. But so do they, especially when it matters and when it's important enough. What also is also or also it's currently trending, but always has been important, is humanizing relationships. Employees now want leaders, managers who are able to be empathic and authentic. People we can trust, people we can share commitment with, people who are authentic. But yeah, how to accomplish that? So, like the workplace statistics already mentioned, check in when possible, reckon, praise publicly. Which is great news for Generation X. Emotional distance management is something from the past. A note to myself, my fellow Generation X, and also Gen Z, it will take another 15 to 20 years before Generation X is going to retire. But at the same time, in these dynamics between us, we have a common need. One generation lacks that, but continues working, continues to dedicate because of their work ethics, while the other generation, for them, it's a condition to be dedicated. Same need, different perception. Diversity is here to stay, and inclusion is just another topic in lifelong learning. In every stage of your life, you will be challenged by human interaction. Remember that in these dynamics, you have a need, and so do the people around you. To be reckoned for what is really important, to be understood, or understanding in general, acting when it matters, and visualizing future steps. Essential components for the bigger challenges ahead of us, especially to maintain a thriving and successful society, a Dutch society, which is the only way to build a brighter future for ourselves and generations to come. I will end with a question, with what I started with today. Have you ever thought about your attitude when you interact with people? So if you want to show me some attitude today, this is the way to contact me. And I'll be here the entire day, so feel free to pull my skirt. See you later.